What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, an automotive news, entertainment, and quote-unquote educational podcast about grassroots racing and car culture, where we give you ways to get out and have fun with cars. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I'm Chris Huffman.
Oh man, Chris, it's good to be back in the studio doing another podcast.
It is. It's good to be back. It's a little warmer today than usual, but it's good to be back.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The AC is broken in the studio slash my condo right now. So
we are sweating for you, heretics.
It's a sticky podcast. But hey, I got some good news for this podcast. No electric car news.
No electric car news this time.
Yeah, there's actually things happening that don't revolve around electric cars.
This is crazy. We haven't had one in what has it been, like 3 months?
I think every episode we've had electric car stuff on here.
Yeah, there's always a new thing, which I will say I want one of those Ford Lightnings now. But
yeah, we were talking about that before the show. Like it's grown on me even more too. Like,
yeah.
It just seems like a great idea.
It really does. And the fact that, and one thing we didn't cover the last time we talked about it was that range is actually including a 1,000 pound payload. So empty, these things could probably do about 400 miles.
And that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's better than most of the cars on the market.
But that's for an electric car podcast.
Yeah.
We're not an electric car podcast.
Internal combustion.
Yes, all the way. And one of the greatest internal combustion races just happened, while we were recording last podcast, actually, the Indy 500.
Yes.
Or was that last weekend?
I think it happened right after.
That was last week, because that's always Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
Sorry, I got my Formula One races and IndyCar races mixed up. But
I don't know how you could do that.
Right? They're totally different. But yeah, it's super exciting. Apparently, it was 105th running of the Indy 500. I'm actually reading a book right now called called Blood and Smoke. I found this in a used book place, but this is about the first running of the Indianapolis 500. I just happened to find this on Memorial Day weekend.
Wow.
While they were running the Indy 500.
What are the chances of that?
Right? It's a weird fate thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a review of this book probably coming onto the site whenever I get done with it, but let me just say the race has come a long way in safety. Holy shit. But the reason I bring it up is because the 105th running, it drew the highest TV rating since 2016.
I mean, that's awesome. More interest in racing.
Right.
That's what we need to, you know, keep our community alive.
Yeah. And I mean, granted, a lot of those people are, you know, what you call, I guess, quote unquote, fair weather race fans. You know, they tune in for the Indy 500 or some really big NASCAR race. You know, they tune in for like a couple races every once in a while.
Yeah.
But hey, that's fine.
Yeah.
That gets sponsorships, that gets money towards the series. And IndyCar, you know, they were suffering for a while there in the past. So
it's good to know that they're coming back. And, you know, it's even if you only tune in for a couple of races, you know, that still gives you an exposure that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Right.
You know, we need as many fans from sports as we can possibly get.
Yeah. And it was good to see the stands were pretty full, too. And I mean, you know, you can argue we're not really done with COVID yet, but let's hope everybody there was actually vaccinated.
It's cool to see things getting back to normal.
It is.
You know, like when we do our weekly catch up and get a beer.
Right.
You know, just in the amount of time since we've been doing that, you know, the bar's gone from kind of a dead zone where we had to drink outside in a tent.
Right.
to being able to just sit out and people watch.
I kind of like the tent thing, though. That was kind of cool.
That was cool having our own little private booth.
Yeah.
But we couldn't tell, you know, all we could do is hear the exhaust notes. We couldn't car watch like we do now.
Yeah. Now the bar we go to, there's literally like the outside bar faces the road, and it's Arapahoe Road here in Denver. So anybody that's from Denver knows there's a lot of traffic on that road. And yeah, there's a lot of cool cars that go down there too.
Yeah, in the couple hours we sit there, we see some supercars, we see some obscure Japanese stuff, some older German stuff.
Yeah.
You know, always at least one, oh my God, that person kept that running.
Yep. And then, you know, everybody else will hear loud exhaust and be like, oh, these idiots out here in the, like, driving around with their loud exhaust thinking they're cool. We're like, oh man, those guys are cool.
Yeah. We're the ones that think you're cool.
Just remember, guys, if you ever modify your car to attract women, you're just stop. You're doing it wrong. The only people you're going to attract are other dudes.
Yep. But if you want to attract other dudes, you hit the nail on the head.
Yes. But anyways, back to Indianapolis on the whole of COVID, right? yeah, it's nice to see things getting kind of back to a normal. Like I said, I hope everybody there was actually vaccinated or at least socially distancing. It was an outside event. So, you know, there's arguments to be made there.
Yeah.
We're not a COVID podcast. But yeah, it was a good race. I only caught the highlights just because to watch it and unless you had like ESPN or something was just really weird this year. So I could only watch like an hour free on the NBC, I think it was, ABC.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So you had to get a subscription to watch the rest.
Yeah. So I just waited and watched the highlights anyways, because I watched the first hour, then watched the highlights because I can't be bothered to get yet another subscription to yet another streaming service.
Yeah, it's a shame what's happening to streaming. It's fragmenting just like cable television did.
Right.
And it's sad. Now you need to pay 70, 80 bucks a month to see the five shows you want to watch scattered across all these streaming right. services.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, and that is one thing about racing that's always been weird is finding places to watch all the racing. Like, it was so nice. There was, like, Speed Vision back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
That would show all sorts of obscure racing, you know?
Yeah, and even cool game shows like Pastime. I love that one.
I don't remember that one at all.
So they get three people in booths, and then a drag racer pulls up in his car.
I do remember that now.
Yep. And they each get to ask a question, and they all try to pick the closest time, and closest time wins a point.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I forgot about that show. Jesus.
I thought it was an amazing concept.
It was cool.
Yeah, because you could get up there sometimes and, you know, you in the audience, you're saying, you know, just like every game show, you're like, I could totally win this.
Yeah. And then some stock Civic pulls up and you're like, all right, you're either really fast or really slow.
Yeah. And then they'll ask three questions that give you no information.
Yeah. They're always asking the weirdest, obscure questions. Like,
yeah, I always like the ones who would ask, how long have you been driving the car?
Yeah.
Because that was the relationship between the driver and the car. It was often overlooked.
Yeah. Yeah, because I can go out and with the Fiesta, but I haven't drag raced in forever, and I never really got it down. Like,
yeah.
I'm not a good drag racer. I'm going to run a shitty time.
Yeah, same here. I'm going to have too much wheel spin, or I'm not going to get my clutch just right off the line.
Right.
You know, it's drag racing is it's really different from other disciplines.
Yeah. It's short-lived, but you have to get it so right because it is such a short-lived time that any small mistake gets exacerbated. Is that the word?
Exaggerated?
Yeah, there you go. Sorry. I got my COVID vaccine a few days ago, and I'm still dealing with the haziness in my head a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that, but I'd rather get a vaccine with a little haziness than ever get COVID again. I would not wish that on my worst enemy.
Yeah. Yeah, like I was telling you, if my symptoms I got were just the vaccine, the real thing. Ooh, yeah. Glad I never got it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I know we typically deal with grassroots racing here, but you know, if there's more money going into the big name racing, that just means there's more interest in racing in general. And there is kind of a trickle down effect.
Yeah.
I don't believe in trickle down economics as much, but you know, if people are into racing, then it's one of those sports that you can kind of go do, you know?
Yeah.
If you're into professional football, then, you know, I guess you can go kind of join like a flag football team or something.
Yeah. Or if you have children, you're more likely to get your kids into flag football or school football.
Right. Exactly.
And so if you're into IndyCar, we're going to see more kids getting into karts. And, you know, that's how we get our future F1 and Indy champions.
Right. Exactly.
Because every one of these people have been, you know, in go-karts since they were, you know, 3-4 years old.
Right. So apparently, Hamza, a friend of the show, Hamza Pechenkovic, who did a bunch of our art and was on one of the early shows, he was telling me, because he has two little boys, I think the kart track out at Bandimere does Father Sundays.
Oh, that's and cool.
At 5 years old, you can start, I think it was five, maybe even four, you can do like a lead follow thing. With the dad in like a faster cart ahead and the kid with a slower cart like following behind.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm like, well, you better get that boy on that.
Yeah. I wish my parents had gotten me into that at four.
Right.
Then, you know, heel toeing and braking and accelerating and being smooth on your inputs would be as simple as breathing or walking.
Right. Yeah. You just you just ingrained into you from an early start.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I don't even, I think Sebastian Vettel was what, 4 when he started racing?
Probably.
And then he became the youngest Formula One champion of all time.
And now he's struggling to even be in the top 10, but...
That's how F1 goes.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, look at Kimi Raikkonen, multi-time champion, and now he's just like, I don't know, with his best finish this year, like 12th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it there's a lot of shuffling, and you know, every year, then there's always a front runner because... those people built the best car within that rule set.
Yep.
And, you know, if your team didn't do it, then there's really not so much you can do about that.
No,
all I mean, you can do is drive your best.
All of those drivers in F1 are, in my opinion, pretty equally skilled. There is a range, and there's some people there that I think are garbage racers that bought their way in, you know? But in general, they're all pretty equally skilled, and it kind of comes down to the car at that point.
Yeah, and the cars are so similar, it just kind of like, okay, well, we all built a new car for this year. Who did the best?
Right. And a difference of like 10 horsepower, you know, will make a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, or just a moderate change in suspension or right. anything like that, or downforce. Yeah, that's huge.
Yep. But, I don't know. I love F1 racing. And also, this isn't on the docket, but apparently we might be getting 2 F1 races here in America this year.
So I know you said we got Miami, right?
So Miami's coming.
Okay.
But that's not till like next calendar year, I think.
Okay.
But the Singapore race got canceled due to, I think, COVID. I think they're still struggling with COVID over there. And, you know, we're not struggling with COVID at all here. But once again, not a
COVID. We're not in denial at all.
Not a COVID podcast. But so they're thinking about, because Singapore was right before the Texas race here, Austin okay. race. So they think they might do 2 races at Austin this year.
Oh, okay. So I wonder if they'll build another track and maybe that could become a regular thing in addition to Singapore.
I don't know. So they've done things before last year because they were struggling to find tracks. Like they ran tracks backwards one time and then forwards the next.
That's kind of neat.
I don't know if Austin is set up to do that. Not all tracks are set up to be run backwards. Because you still have to have your runoff areas and stuff to be FIA certified.
Yeah.
But I'd love to see 2 races in America.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I mean, I guess we're getting 2 here in the future, but let's do it now.
Yeah, we could get 2. I mean, we get F1. NASCAR is finally in the 21st century.
Right.
You know, America could actually be a front runner, you know, leading developments in race technology, and we could be breeding some of the best drivers. And like you said, having a wider array of professional motorsports is going to give us better grassroots.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Just more interest and more money in general, you know, it trickles down and everybody needs more drivers and, you know, everybody's trying to find that next driver, that next car.
Yeah.
You know, the next series that gets popular, whatever it is. And that's where the money comes from.
Maybe Milton Friedman should have written his paper about racing instead of economics.
Maybe. So speaking of F1 and Indy, actually, with the Indianapolis 500 happening the weekend after Monaco Grand Prix and F1, that was actually kind of a deal that they did to not overlap each other.
Oh, that's cool.
Because pretty much the guys in charge of F1 and IndyCar at this point are friends again, kind of. They were, you know.
Was there a falling out?
I just think they didn't really, like, know each other all that well before.
Okay.
Or, like, didn't crosstalk all that much. But now they all know each other, and... there's F1 drivers that are kind of wanting to do some more indie stuff, and indie drivers maybe trying to try over F1 and stuff like that. So there's going to be some more crosstalk there, and I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, I mean, if drivers can move back and forth, then, you know, everybody benefits.
Right.
We see more talent everywhere. I would be really excited to see that. I mean... it may be, you know, 10, 20 years down the line, they could just be one league.
Maybe. So, I mean, I think there was a time where F1 cars competed, like, in the IndyCar series.
Like the same F1 cars that were spec'd for that season?
Yeah, I think that was, like, you know, maybe like the 50s or something. But there was a time where, you know, open wheel racing was open wheel racing kind of deal, you know? And, Roger Penske, owns IndyCar, blah, blah, blah. Man, that brain fog is just sitting in like crazy. The point is, F1 drivers coming to compete in IndyCar or an Indy 500 would also draw more international press, you know, because Indianapolis 500 is a very American race.
Yeah. And so, and F1 is not as American. I mean, the Drive to Survive on Netflix has definitely increased its American viewership.
Oh, a lot.
Without a doubt. But if F1 was seen as a series that, you know, America could claim a piece of, you know?
Yeah.
I think that would elevate it.
I mean, shit, at least in our
country.
Yeah, when was the last time we had an American driver in Formula One?
Oh, honestly, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last guy.
Yeah.
Scott Speed, maybe?
Who did he drive for?
I don't even remember. That was like so long ago. I don't even think I was following F1 at that time. But yeah, I don't know. It's cool to see things coming back and like growing, because everybody's been afraid of racing falling off.
Yeah.
And it kind of seemed like it might be doing that for a while.
Yeah.
Now we're getting like this resurgence. I think maybe post COVID, quote, quote.
Yeah.
everybody's just like wanting to do things again and kind of, you know, not taking for granted like, oh, hey, you know, I enjoyed this stuff before and I kind of fell off of it. But like, hey, like, there's things in this world that can take this stuff away from us.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, embrace it while it's here.
It's like, I put Indy 500 on my bucket list and now I'm really feeling the weight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I better go do this.
Yeah.
So hopefully that isn't just like a weird spike and we'll go back down again, but, you know, I guess we'll see.
I mean, hey, if it leads to any lasting, you know, positive effect for racing, you know, something that can bring it into the future,
mm-hmm.
even if it falls off a little bit, I think we'll see some good stuff from it.
Yeah.
I mean, you see a lot more people just out and about, like every bar now is crowded with people who are like, you're not the kind of person who goes to a bar.
Yeah.
And it's just because everyone had cabin fever.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to get out.
Also, I don't know if it's just me, but when you do go out to those bars, you'll see people wearing like McLaren hats and shit. Like, there's more Formula One fans out there now. Like, I've seen like people wearing like AMG Petronas, you know, Mercedes shirts and stuff.
God, how cool would it be if we saw the same level of passion that America shows for football or Australia shows for Bathurst here for Formula One? Like, I want to see two guys in a bar fighting over Red Bull versus Ferrari.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. And I mean, that's the way it is in other countries still. You know, it's still a huge thing.
Yeah.
In countries you don't expect, too. Like, so a lot of the Middle Eastern countries. Like, yeah. I would never have expected, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, they would have been as big into Formula One as they are.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I tell you what, some of those Middle Eastern countries are the biggest racing and car fans, like, in the world.
Yeah, Dubai has an F1 track, doesn't it?
Dubai does, yeah. Azerbaijan.
Oh, wow. I didn't know Azerbaijan had one.
Yep. And then, like, Dubai is really big into drag racing. Like, a lot of the fastest GTRs and Supras and stuff are in Dubai.
Wow. And there's a lot of money in Dubai.
I mean, there is. But that doesn't necessarily... Money doesn't necessarily translate to cars, you know?
That's true.
Or into passion for racing.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Especially, like, drag racing, which is such an American thing.
It is. It is. And there's a lot of budget drag race builds here that kind of made the sport.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's cool to see. You know, Dubai, they have a Ferrari theme park in Dubai, too.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's not surprising, honestly.
Yeah, there's this, it's actually, the whole thing is covered by this giant, it looked like it was designed by Ferrari because it has this elegant kind of airfoil curve to it. And there's one ride that goes up through the top.
Dubai is such a weird place.
Right, because you can't do any of that stuff in the cities. It's still, you know, not considered moral.
Right.
So all the shows, all the races are like out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Where the morality police can't bust you.
Isn't drinking still like illegal there or something?
I think that it's heavily frowned upon. I think if you're an American in Dubai, certain hotels will let you drink, but you can't go out. But, you know, God help you if you bring bacon with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll respect that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. I've would be worried about traveling to Dubai just because I feel like I would accidentally get myself in trouble. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to be offensive or anything.
Right.
Just like me being my dumb, big mouth American, you know, saying some dumb shit.
Yeah. I'd have a shoe in my mouth for sure.
Right. But I don't know, like 1320 Video goes to Dubai and shit all the time. They love it there.
Maybe we can do a Religion of Speed Dubai episode.
Maybe.
That would be awesome.
Go get some Nissan Patrols and go bomb the desert and shit.
I would love that.
Yeah.
That would be fun. And we could just go out into the middle of nowhere and just, have you seen the crazy videos where they'll just be going like 140 miles an hour in like a Camry?
Oh, it's always a Camry drifting it sideways and shit. Yeah. These guys are nuts.
Yeah. I've always wanted to learn the trick where they can prop the car up on two wheels and keep it there.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be able to do that without killing myself.
Yeah, because they don't even like stunt drivers use like a ramp to get up there.
Yeah.
They could like go kind of slow and like get up there and then keep going.
Yeah.
These guys just whip it until it like pops up on two wheels and just go.
They load the suspension, then unload it, then catch it with the steering.
Yeah.
And balance it. And you know, it's like in drifting, if you go too far, you spin out. If you don't go too far enough, you don't initiate a drift.
Right.
In this, if you go too far, you're on your lid.
Right.
And you destroyed your car. And it's like, well, let's get another car and try again.
Yeah. How much money do you have to have where you're just throwing away SUVs just trying to figure out how to do this?
It's like, so how many did you roll? Oh, just like a dozen.
Yeah. Whatever.
But then I got a good one.
We need money. That's what we really need.
Yep. Money, we can make a very entertaining podcast.
Right? We'll do a whole podcast up on two wheels while driving.
I'll be happy to do that. I guess we'll both have to be sitting on the same side of the car.
Yeah. I don't know. I've seen crazy shit, like them changing tires while on two wheels and shit. Like looking up on two wheels, one guy will like hop out and like change the tire that's in the air.
That sounds awesome. I need to watch that video.
We'll watch that in the podcast. Oh, but we don't have a ton of money, so we're not quite like F1 or just throwing trucks into ditches in Dubai. We're more like endurance racing budget level people. Like that's kind of that's a maximum of our budget.
Yeah. Yeah. We could save up enough to pay for the gas and the tires to do an endurance race.
Right. And like a cheap Miata or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it doesn't have a lot of power. It doesn't destroy a whole lot of rubber.
Right. And lucky for us, I mean, we've talked about a bunch of different budget endurance racing stuff on this show so far.
Absolutely.
And finally, it seems like the SCCA is going to be jumping on that bandwagon as well.
Finally.
Yes.
And you know, this is like we were saying before, you know, we're not an economics podcast, but I think that this is SCCA trying to be more appealing to millennials.
I feel like they've been doing a lot of that recently. Like with the new classing we were talking about last week, kind of opening up like, hey, kids, I know you like modding cars and not really building them for a specific racing class and stuff. That's kind of more serious, old-timery type stuff, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think, this endurance racing thing is another thing of them trying to appeal to younger people.
Yeah, because, you know, it's most people our age don't have the money to compete in a lot of the SCCA classes.
Because they've been around for so long. The rule sets are so like structured now that you have to spend a lot of money to get to the top of those classes at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just show up with a creative build.
No.
Yeah. There's a few options and none of them are cheap.
This is going to sound like a really weird, nerdy comparison, but it's like World of Warcraft at this point. Huh. So when World of Warcraft first came out, I feel like there were so many different builds you could do. Or you can do like Magic the Gathering, pretty much any video game.
Right.
When it first comes out, people are experimenting with things.
Yeah.
And then at some point, somebody figures out the best one.
Right. And there's no counter to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then somebody figures out a counter, but then everybody has to run that counter or the best thing or both.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's no spot in either the racing classes or your video games or anything like that to just try fun things and come out on top.
And SCCA has been around a lot to where it's at that stagnant level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that they're making these rules to refresh that.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, like I said, most people our age don't have the money to build that Corvette to run in that class or that right. STI to run competitively. So it's cool if we can just jump in our Miata that's, you know, half finished.
Right.
and run this endurance race and, you know, maybe not come out on top, but still have a good time and be competitive.
Right. You're still going to get your wheel-to-wheel racing, especially one reason I like the budget endurance racing is because the level of cars is all over the place.
Yeah.
So you have to deal with traffic both slower than you and faster than you.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Le Mans class or something, you know, where you have multiple different classes of cars out there.
And, you know, it's not just slower and faster, but, you know, some cars can go into a corner faster.
Mm-hmm.
Some cars can come out faster. You know, like if you're running head to head with a 911 and you're trying to pass it, then you're going to use a different tactic than if you're trying to pass a Corvette.
Right.
You know, the Corvette's going to go into the corner faster, maybe struggle to put the power down on the way out. 911 can go sideways and still put its power down,
right.
But it understeers a lot going in. So that's the kind of experience that's amazing when you've got a spread out class like that, mm-hmm. you know, other than just like a spec series where everybody kind of breaks at the same time. Everybody got to kind of gets on the power at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, spec series have their place. I love watching spec Miata.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, like that race we highlighted the other day of that three-way freaking photo finish was ridiculous.
Yeah, because it was all down to the skill of the drivers.
Right. But, yeah, having cars that are all over the place different is also really cool just because you have to deal with traffic. You have to deal with people trying to pass you. There's a whole different level of racing there. And I feel like for amateur people, like, even if you go out there and you don't win, that's still more fun because you're out there and you're competing, you know?
Absolutely.
You're not, if you're on a budget, you're still out there. You're still having to deal with all that stuff. Not like a spec series where if you don't have enough money, there's no way you're anywhere near the front.
Right. Right. And you know, you maybe couldn't even afford to build the spec car in the first place.
It's really funny that I'm like, the spec series costs more, but every spec series starts out really cheap,
yeah.
and just gets exponentially more expensive as the top cars get more and more crazy.
Because those specific parts are the ones, mm-hmm. and once companies figure that out, then the price on those parts goes up.
Right. So, I don't know. I'm excited there's more endurance racing content out there. Like, it's so weird. Endurance racing used to be the thing, like, 24 hours of Le Mans or the 12 hours of Sebring. It was like a high-end professional race.
Yeah.
But now, like, anybody can go out and do endurance racing and get a ton of seat time.
Yeah, the challenge is build a car that can drive for 24 hours full tilt.
Yeah. Yeah, and that takes... So, I was following some highlights because Lemons is actually at High Plains Raceway this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to get out there and take a look, but unfortunately, it just wasn't feeling great. But I was just kind of following him on Facebook and just some of the failures and stuff that happen when you push a car that hard for that long. Like, one person had a brake caliper, like, the mounting tab, actually, the bottom part of it, like, broke and came off and just destroyed the wheel.
Holy crap.
I'm guessing just from the heat strain of getting hot and cooling off or getting hot and cooling off for so long.
So the whole brake just flew off.
Yeah, the brake caliper just flew off and destroyed the wheel and shit. Like,
wow, that's a lot like what happened to the Gears and Gasoline Evo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he
lost one bolt and he actually was able to salvage the caliper, but it did shear his Advan wheel in half.
Yeah. But I bet you, like, for a street car, that bolt would have never came out.
Right.
Because the heat cycling would have never worked its way out that.
It's never going to be that extreme.
Right.
Yeah, but if you're standing on the brakes, you know, especially at the end of a straight like that.
Yeah.
Those brakes are seeing so much heat.
Yep.
And then cooling down instantly once you start to go fast again.
Yep. And I think that's what appeals to me about budget endurance racing, why I want to get into it so much, is because it is based around reliability a lot more than just outright speed.
Yeah.
Because I do love my, like, time attack cars where it is just one lap.
Yep.
All I need to do is get one good lap.
Yep.
But on the other hand, being a mechanic, I think this just appeals to me where it's like, no, this is down to, like, we need to take into consideration everything that can break.
Yes.
And address all of it ahead of time. And there's still going to be things that come up that you don't expect, but...
Right, because there's so many systems that can fail.
Right.
In such creative ways.
So, it looks like the new SCCA class is, they just announced it, and there's not a whole ton of details quite yet. From what I'm reading, the first race is going to be invite only, because I think they're just trying things out.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make sure they get the rule set down right, how they run events, you know. The other people have been doing this a while, but SCCA hasn't, and, you know.
Yeah.
they want to make sure they're the most professional they can be because they have a big name behind them.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of set the standard of professionalism.
Right. Somebody like Lucky Dog Racing can kind of go out there and be like, oh, well, we kind of screwed up this weekend a little bit, but hey, y'all had fun, right?
Right.
You know, but SCCA is a little more serious than that.
It takes itself a lot more seriously.
Right. But yeah, so we got like, we got Champ Car, World Racing League, Lucky Dog Racing League, Grid Life has a one that I guess they're doing.
They're going to do an endurance race.
I guess so. It keeps getting mentioned in this. I didn't really look into that too much more. But yeah, there's like, we need to build an endurance racing car because apparently there's races all over the goddamn place.
That's the new thing. I'm excited. Yeah, we should pick out a car and see what we can do. You know, with used car prices spiking, it's going to be interesting to see what you could build for $500 or $1,000 these days, because it's very different from, you know, even 5 years ago.
Right.
5 years ago, the answer was just Miata.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best option. But now it's like the base price is $5,000. So.
Yeah. So if you want to have money to upgrade, you've got to get a little outside the box with your thinking.
I think if we build this is going to show like my biases, but I think if we build a budget endurance racer like a early 2000s Corolla,
I mean that's the reliability factor,
right? It's not going to be the fastest, but no. I tell you what, like especially if you can get a Corolla like XR,
yeah,
with a 1ZZ in it or 2ZZ, I think it was the 2ZZ because it was the Lotus engine.
Oh, the one that's in the Elise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that's a good engine. It makes decent power.
Yeah.
And it's a Toyota. Like it's.
Yeah.
You probably don't even just put a cage in it in a seat and go racing.
Yeah.
You know?
And then we just lighten it, you know, upgrade the brakes, put some decent tires on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that'd be the way to go, honestly.
I think that ours would still be running at the end of the day.
Right. We might not finish like top three because we wouldn't have the fastest car, but yeah, we'd finish.
And there's a lot of little things we could do to, you know, gain an edge on speed with those. Yeah.
I mean, they're not that heavy. You can fit some big tires on them.
Yeah.
I mean, people give like that generation of Toyota a lot of shit for being kind of like blah.
Right.
But
it's still a Toyota, though.
It's still a Toyota. And if you tune them, they are actually really good, in my opinion.
And the generations that catch shit are the ones that don't see the Craigslist spike.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody cares about that generation Corolla, so we can get them dirty cheap.
Yeah. My wife used to have one of those. And, yeah. I was blown away when I was shopping for used cars for how cheap it is to get another one.
Yeah. Yeah. Because also people that own them just love them.
Yeah.
You know, and hold on to them.
They'll run until the wheels fall off.
Right.
Yeah.
Either that or a Camry. We could do a Camry too.
Camry, we'd have more power.
We'd have more power. Big V6.
Yeah. And we'd still have the reliability factor.
Right.
And, you know, we'd probably have to spend a little bit more, but hey, if we get from that generation, you know, nobody really cares.
Right.
Yeah, nobody really cares about those Camrys, so we might be the only one to show up in one of those.
Yeah, probably. Well, I don't know. If you're smart, you'd build a Toyota, but because I've seen a lot of endurance racers just pick cars that I'm like, why?
Yeah, it's like, I understand you love the Pontiac Fiero. Right? Yes, it's a mid-engine GM, and it was cheap, but do you really think it can run for 24 hours without braking?
Can it run for 24 hours in a normal day?
Oh, did it run for 24 minutes today?
Right. Well, speaking of Toyota, and I'll talk about this before we go to break and turn the swamp cooler on and cool off a little bit here.
Yeah.
Because it is getting sweaty in here.
A little bit.
Speaking of Toyota, not has anything to do with racing. I just was excited about this. Apparently, they put a trademark thing in for the Toyota Crown name here in America.
See, that's cool, because they could have just as easily brought this over as a Lexus and given it an alphabet soup number name.
Right.
I think that these are really cool ideas, and I wish that some of the names from overseas would make it to the U.S. more often, some of the brands.
Yeah, I don't understand why they change the names sometimes.
Yeah, the Nissan Bluebird sounds so much cooler than the Nissan Altima.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, the Honda Jazz sounds so much better than the Honda Fit.
Yeah.
And the Toyota Soarer sounds infinitely better than the SC whatever number you want to put after it.
Right. Yeah, but... Or even just like the Fair Lady.
Yeah. Fair Lady instead of Z.
Yeah. Or the Fair Lady Z, honestly. Yeah. But it's just like, I don't know. I guess I'm sure there's some sort of marketing out there that showed, like, especially when they were first introducing these before people kind of understood that the Japanese are kind of loose and with the English language, you know, and like to just give weird names to things, you know, where it was like, well, in the 60s, nobody was probably going to buy a Nissan Fairlady, you know, as a sports car.
Well, yeah, because they're trying to market to a masculine market.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It had to be macho names. So the Zed, you know.
which Z is arguably the coolest letter in the alphabet.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. I used
X.
To, X is cool. I used to love Q until recent developments kind of killed that letter for me.
Yeah. I was like, what? I was just thinking James Bond there, but
Right. Yeah. James Bond is what made the letter Q amazing.
Right.
And then Donald Trump ruined it.
Well,
he amped up the crowd ruined it.
That the QAnon thing was such a weird thing. Did you notice it just disappeared?
I think that everybody just stopped talking about it who believes in it. I think they went underground.
That's fine, too.
That's where it belongs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can have your crazy conspiracy theories.
Right.
Just don't make it like a primetime news thing,
Right. You know, people didn't used to advertise the fact that they thought the world was flat. They were embarrassed to admit it.
Right. The internet was a mistake, is basically what I'm saying. It brought people together in the wrong ways.
Right. Yeah. It created support groups for some of the worst things possible.
Yes. But also, thanks to the internet, we got to know that things like the Toyota Crown were even a thing.
Right? Because we never would have seen it otherwise.
No, we wouldn't have. Before the internet, like maybe they didn't have a Crown in Gran Turismo.
No, I don't think they did. I can't think of a racing game that had the Toyota Crown.
No, because I mean, it's not really a racing car.
Yeah. So what was the engine that was in it?
I don't know what the modern Crown has. Probably some V8, but at some point it had a V12 in it.
Wow.
Do you remember Smoking Nagata, the Top Secret Supra?
Yeah.
That was a Toyota Crown V12 twin turboed.
That's where he got that V12.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I always love watching Smokey Nagata's videos.
Yeah.
He's just so brash. Like, I'm going to do a burnout in the middle of an interstate and then drive 200 miles an hour.
Yeah. He got arrested in Germany for that.
Really?
Yeah. The car got impounded, almost crushed.
Oh, man.
Right? Yeah, that was... Oh, man. I remember seeing, like, grainy videos of that shit on the internet way back in, like... It was kind of post-dial-up days, but I think I was still on dial-up because I grew up in the middle of freaking nowhere.
Yeah.
You know? So to watch that video, I was like, I want to watch this video. I'll be back in 3 hours.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to go outside and do something. I think I watched some of the option DVDs of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because back in the day, that was how you watched car videos.
Yep.
I still have some of those old DVDs.
Ooh, we need to do something with those.
Okay, I'm down.
Like a commentary track over the DVD?
Yeah, there's a great one where they race... I think it was an S2000 Civic Type R. They have, an S chassis, an R chassis, and then just like an M3 in there.
Yeah, they did get occasional like German cars in there for some reason.
Yeah, and they just, but it was great, you know, and it was back when people had more patience.
Yeah.
So these are almost like feature length films.
Yeah.
You know, now car videos last 30 seconds.
Yep.
Because people just swipe to the next video.
I have noticed that. Like, I think I watched some option video that's on the internet a while back, and I was like, man, they are just jabbering on for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's crazy. You know, my wife will watch TikTok, and then she gets irritated when I put on a movie when it has, you know, an intro credit scene that right. lasts 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that's short by some standards.
Oh, yeah. There's some movies. I mean... Like, go back and watch, like, 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is a slow movie.
Yeah, our center of attention, our attention span is definitely shrinking.
Yeah.
As a species.
Yeah, that's I've seen multiple reasons for that. You know, whether it is technology causing it or, like, if it's a cause or a correlation or stuff like that.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff to learn still, but... Yeah, I mean, I definitely have ADHD, so...
Yeah, my attention span shrank.
Yeah. You
know, I'll try to watch a movie that just enthralled me when I was a kid, and I can't get more than half an hour into it.
Before your phone's out in front of you, you're like, why? It's why am I even doing this?
How did I start playing Pokemon?
But to circle back around, hopefully we get the Toyota Crown over here, but of course... sedan sales in America aren't that great.
Yeah.
And this article did mention that in The Chinese market, there is a version of the Highlander called the Toyota Crown Kluger.
Oh.
Which is a strange-ass name.
Yeah.
Very German.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder if they're trying to sound German.
I don't know. I mean, they're China, so...
Yeah, but I wonder
why
if...
Germany?
Well, maybe that's where the marketing is skewing these days in China.
Maybe.
I'm not up to date on my Chinese focus groups.
It sounds German. German's luxurious.
Yeah.
So I could see that, you know, the Chinese are very big into their luxury cars because they're just kind of getting into cars and everybody wants to prove how cool and baller they are.
Yeah, the status thing is really blowing up over there.
Yeah. So I could see that happening, but I can't see a Highlander Toyota Crown Kluger version here in America, though.
But the Highlander doesn't have any issues selling here.
Well, especially not here in Colorado.
Yeah, here in Colorado, any Toyota with four-wheel drive is just unobtainium gold.
Yeah.
And you could drive it off the lot new and sell it for the same amount of money in 3 years with 50,000 miles on it.
Oh, yeah, easy.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Which is ludicrous.
It's like an investment.
Yeah, it really is. I could buy a new Tacoma and, you know, drive it once a week and sell it in 3 years for a profit.
Probably, yeah. I'm interested to see what Toyota is actually going to do with this. Maybe they just did the trademark thing to keep the Crown name here in America.
Just so nobody else could grab it.
That's possible.
Yeah.
But I'm really hoping we get a luxury Toyota with, like... Because in Japan, the luxury cars all have cloth seats.
Interesting.
Because in Japan, leather is not considered a luxury thing.
Well, it is really humid. They're on the ocean.
It gets really hot. It gets really cold there.
Yeah, you'd
leather
stick to
sucks.
The seats. Yeah.
If you're from, like, where I'm from Michigan.
Yeah.
Leather sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm back in Tennessee. Whenever I would drive anything with leather seats, I had to run the AC, which if I had the windows down, my back is just covered in sweat by the time I get out of it.
Or if you dare to drive shirtless and then you try to get out of that seat and you're just like stuck to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no fun.
Yeah.
Which is funny, the juxtaposition between being in a car with leather seats and driving around with no shirt on.
Hey, listen, a lot of old GM cars came with leather and then those eventually get handed down to rednecks. So
that's how that happens.
Yeah. And I grew up pretty redneck. So, you know,
I will say when I had my Miata, I had a farmer's tan. I had a great tan, but it always ended at my shirt sleeves.
Yep.
So I wanted to drive around with no shirt just to even it out a bit.
I always get the trucker tan.
Oh, just one arm?
Just the left arm?
Yeah.
Way more tan than the right arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although now that I got the Fiesta, I don't drive with the windows down as much because that thing, the wind buffering in that thing is terrible.
So is that just if you have one window down, if you open up another window to like equalize it, it's okay?
Yeah, but then it just gets like this weird like swirling wind thing going in there. And now I have long hair and my hair gets in my face. So I just drive windows up, AC on now.
It can be a pain to drive with long hair.
It is.
I once drove a Porsche 911 convertible, and I realized I needed a haircut because at about 130 miles an hour, my hair was whipping into my eyes so hard, I thought I was going to go blind.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I got to put my hair in a man bun when I drive any sort of convertible or anything.
It's absolutely worth it to drive a convertible.
It is, but then I have a man bun.
Yeah.
And people look at me weird.
And they see you because you're in a convertible.
Yeah. So if I'm driving like a Miata with a man bun, not a good look.
You know, in Denver, you'd blend right in.
It's true. It's very true. All right. I'm getting really warm. We're going to take a quick break, get some nice cold beers maybe. Got some beers in the fridge.
Beers sound good.
And put on that swamp cooler, get a little cooler here, and we will be right back.
See you guys in a minute.
All right, we are back. We are cooled off, and we are beered up.
Yep. So now we're a little bit more loquacious.
Sure, something like that.
Yeah.
I tell you, with that fog from the COVID shot still in my brain, like just coming up with words a lot of times, I'm like, my vocabulary has dropped like a grade level. I feel like
that'd be really troubling to quantify.
Right.
You know, like how many grade levels you lose from getting COVID or getting the vaccination.
Right.
You know,
I'm doing a lot better now, but it almost felt like when you first wake up in the morning.
Oh, yeah. But you can't get awake.
Right.
Like you're just that way all day.
Yeah. Like no matter how much caffeine you take, it's just like, nope, still groggy. Weird.
Yep.
But
It's horrible. This virus is real.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I know there's people out there like, well, see, you shouldn't have got the vaccine. The vaccine's blah, 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 blah. But hey, now I get to go see my parents, so yeah. It's worth it.
Well, and if you only feel this way for a week from the vaccine, it's better than feeling that way for 6 months from getting the virus.
Right, exactly. Once again, not a COVID podcast. Maybe that'll be the title of this podcast.
Not a COVID podcast.
No, we are a car podcast that talks about grassroots racing. What better thing about grassroots race, or what thing, what car better encapsulates like budget grassroots racing next to the Miata?
Right.
Besides the Toyota GR86.
I mean, this is the alternative to the Miata.
Right.
You know, sadly, this new one is a little bit pricier.
Yeah, they did raise the price a little bit, unfortunately.
But I will say, I think the Toyota version is gorgeous.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up myself. A lot of it's the same, yes, because they're pretty similar. But the front bumper treatment and this little, like, whale tail spoiler they got on it?
Yeah, it looks just like a baby fifth-gen Supra.
Yeah, it really does.
And the Supra, for all of its faults, is also a breathtakingly beautiful machine.
Yeah, actually, I think the front end looks a lot more like the new Z.
It does kind of have that gaping maw, which apparently they've updated. I heard that they've updated the Proto Z and put the silver bumper across the front, just like it had with the old, you know, 240 and 280 Zs.
Oh, like a bumper?
Yeah, like, you know, the bumper that kind of bisects right. The gaping maw?
Yeah.
Supposedly, that's one of the new things they've started saying might be on the new Z.
No, don't do that. Yeah. I like the gaping maw.
Gaping maw is great.
If you have a 240Z, what's the first thing you do? Pull off the freaking chrome bumper because it's ugly.
Yeah, which is exactly probably what's going to happen with the new Z. All the people who want to do something to make it look unique are going to delete that chrome bumper immediately.
Right. But yeah, like, it does have that same square kind of grill, but I don't know, I think this looks a lot better. It isn't trying to be like, I feel like the BRZ is almost trying to get in like Porsche territory or something in its front end. It's hard to describe.
Yeah, back end looks like an Aston Martin.
Yeah
it looks like they're trying to kind of retcon the you know, some of the older supercar and high-end sports car aesthetics.
Right.
But this car is its own thing. It's got its own look. It's unique. And I really dig the way this thing looks.
Yeah.
The only complaint I have, well, two complaints. The standard complaint.
Not enough power.
Not enough power.
Of course.
It needs boost. The only other complaint I have really is that this price tag puts it within shouting distance of the new Z.
Yeah.
Which has double the power, and, you know, the only thing you're really sacrificing is a back seat at that point.
Yeah, and the Z, I think, is going to be a little bit heavier.
Yeah, is it, so this one's supposed to be, what, at 2,700 pounds?
I wonder, where does it say in here what this, does it not give a weight spec in this? It's supposed to be all the specs, but I guess it doesn't give that right now.
Oh, around 28.
All right, so it hasn't really changed that much in weight. They're saying about 2,800 pounds, so that doesn't really... I guess it is still technically like the same chassis. They just kind of... It's like when they went from the 350 to the 370Z, where it was like the same chassis, they just tweaked a bunch of stuff.
Right, which is kind of what they're saying they did with the 370 to the new Z.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were talking about it on the podcast, especially in the interior bits. You're like, oh, this is a 370Z still.
Which is fine, because it's a 370 with two turbos from the factory.
Right, and a lot better looks. So, but yeah, this is it. We're getting a weird like price to performance thing going right now with the ND Miata, the GR86/BRZ, the 400Z or just Z. I think they're calling it
the new Z.
The new Z, the 2-liter Supra.
Yeah,
and the 3-liter Supra.
Yeah,
like you have this weird range of budget to horsepower in the Japanese sports car segment right now.
Yeah, I feel like they're not trying to be as competitive in your performance for the money, and they're just trying to offer kind of the best car they think they can and price it where they have to.
Yeah.
Obviously the 4-cylinder Supra was definitely trying to capture, you know, the people who wanted a Supra but didn't want to spend the money on the 6.
Right.
I think that those people should just buy one of these, though.
Yeah, because does the 4-cylinder Supra come with a manual?
Nope. Same exact transmission, actually, as the 6, so the gear ratios don't match it quite as well.
That kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you want a manual transmission, this is still, from Toyota, that's still your only option for a sports car.
This is still your best option. And if you want an automatic 8.6, then that's when you should buy the 4-cylinder Supra.
Yeah, I agree.
Because then you're going to get a little bit nicer of an interior. You're going to get boost. You're going to get a little bit more torque. And if you're going to buy the automatic, you know, you didn't care quite as much about the driver's aspect of it.
Right.
I still wish Toyota would come out with a manual version of the 6. And I'm hoping that the Z will take enough sales from it to at least encourage them to make some sort of special edition.
You know, we keep talking about manual transmissions and stuff like that, and that I know we're manual transmission purists.
Absolutely.
For sports cars especially.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I buy a pickup automatic. I don't give a shit. But the problem is just most people don't care as much, unfortunately, here in America.
It seems really sad.
It's really weird, too.
Yeah.
To me, I don't understand why you would buy a sports car with an automatic. Because unless, of course, you're talking like 9/11 territory, that you're going to the track, you want the ultimate track car.
Right.
The ultimate fastest thing.
Yeah.
Then, okay, yeah, a dual clutch is faster. I get that. But if you're buying even a Supra, the Supra is not the fastest car in the world.
Right, and it's not like its automatic transmission is a really nice dual clutch.
Right.
You know, it's got a torque converter.
Yeah. So, why not just get the manual? I mean, I'm glad there's options out there. There's people out there that can't drive manuals for health reasons or for, you know...
Yeah.
There's plenty of reasons why you can't drive a manual.
There's a lot of younger people who never had the opportunity to learn.
Right. And if you are one of those people, get a hold of us. I will teach you how to drive a stick. It's honestly not hard.
We are happy to pass that on. I heard Jeremy Clarkson compare heel towing to changing a ribbon on a typewriter, and it made me feel very sad.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's going to be there eventually, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of a fading thing. I was thinking the other day when I was in the shower, I was like, you know what? I need to start, like, I need to teach one of those, like, teenage advanced driver courses.
Yeah.
Like, go out on, like, a skid pad and teach kids how to, like, you know, control a skid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Not, like, full racing thing, but just, like, here, kids, this is how you control a car.
Right.
Because I was thinking that because, A, it's going to make them safer drivers, better drivers. But, B, there's some of them there that are going to be like, hey, this is kind of fun.
Yeah, you can create a new generation of enthusiasts.
Right.
And on a personal level, teaching somebody something is the best way to learn about it.
Yeah, that's true, too. Because you got to make sure you know your shit before you go into that.
Absolutely.
And you're probably going to learn some stuff from those kids doing things. You're like, oh, I wasn't expecting this, you know?
Like, I never expected that mistake.
Right. So, I was like, huh, I need to get in on that. Because I'm not of a driving quality that I can teach a racing driver anything.
Right.
I need racing driver instruction still.
Right.
But I can teach a teenager some shit.
Yeah, you can teach a teenager how to control their oversteer.
Right.
You can teach a teenager, you know, how not to understeer their car into a curb when it's snowing.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, we could pass on. And anything that helps manual transmissions proliferate into the future, you know, even though we know that eventually they will be a thing of the past, sadly, I at least want them to last as long as internal combustion is with us.
Right.
You know, because it doesn't make sense to have an electric car.
Which I didn't have this on the docket, but I've been hearing more and more stuff about these e-fuels. We talked about it like a few podcasts ago about that Porsche e-fuel.
Yeah.
I guess there's other manufacturers out there starting to claim this stuff. There was one manufacturer that claimed by 2030 they could have some sort of e-fuel. And if you didn't listen to that podcast, what they're talking about is a man-made fuel that I learned some more about how they do this. They're using solar or wind power to convert salt water into hydrogen.
Oh, okay.
And then combining that with carbon to make their own hot, clean hydrocarbons.
Wow.
Which fuel, get oil, diesel, hydrocarbons. That's all they are. So they're just creating their own synthetic hydrocarbon fuel that's supposed to be compatible with any sort of gasoline thing. It's not an ethanol, so you don't have to worry about seals and stuff like that.
Wow, and this will work with a gasoline-powered engine without any conversion.
That's what they say. And they also say it's because it's man-made, it doesn't have any added bullshit in it, it's way cleaner burning.
Yeah.
especially with a catalytic converter and stuff like that. It's almost, they say it's almost net zero as far as emissions go.
Wow. For anything that uses internal combustion, that is huge.
Right. So, and there's a company out there that says they can have it to the pumps in Britain by 2030 for less than the price of a gallon currently.
Wow.
Now, that's a lot of big ifs.
Yeah, that's
ifs.
That's a lot of claims.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, I think it was Boeing? One of the big airplane manufacturers said they're going to be using an e-fuel in jets here in the next, like, 10 years.
Which, to be honest, that's probably where we're going to see these e-fuels begin, mm-hmm. is in aviation. Because, you know, there's a lot of fuel gets burned in aviation.
And while cars can be converted to electric a lot easier for short trips, planes need a lot more capacity because they do longer trips.
They do, and it's about reliability when you're up there too.
True.
You know,
you don't want range anxiety when you're in an airplane.
Absolutely. There's no pulling over when you break down.
Right.
You know, there's find a field and hopefully not die.
Yeah.
So it'll be cool if the technology can get perfected to that point where they're comfortable using it in aviation, then it could easily proliferate to the car world.
Yeah.
And we could still control the power of explosions while we drive around.
We could. Now, I still think electric's going to win in the long run, but this will maybe proliferate the gasoline engine a little bit longer.
Yeah.
We might get another 10-ish years of people experimenting with, you know, variable compression ratio engines and stuff, trying to get them more and more efficient. I do think electric's going to win in the long run just because it is better. We've talked about this before. It makes more power. It weighs more, yes, but
that's overall, only for now.
Only for now, until we get battery technology even better.
Yeah.
Which they're constantly working on that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this might keep gasoline engines going a little longer, and in turn, the manual transmission a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Man, my brain is not good, working well. But also, it'll help us keep our old cars on the road longer, too.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like we've spoken about this a few podcasts ago. You know, if the supply dries up for gasoline, it might be really hard for us to find gasoline.
Right.
You know, even though we'll always be looking for it.
Yeah.
But if there's an alternative we can put in a 30-year-old car that won't degrade the internals like ethanol does.
Yep.
Then that's something that I'd be excited to see.
And plus, we wouldn't be as frowned upon driving around our old gasoline engine cars by all these new age hippies that are just being born today.
That's true. Driving around in their not even Priuses, they're full-on plug-in EVs.
Right. You realize there's going to be a point where driving a gasoline engine is like smoking in a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. And people look at you, and certain cities and municipalities ban it.
Right.
Yeah. You won't be able to drive a gasoline-powered car through Golden anymore.
But I mean, I'm surprised they haven't done that already, honestly.
Yeah. They banned vaping on the sidewalk.
Between Golden and Boulder, I'm just like, oh my God. But, I mean, I get it. Everybody wants clean air, but, you know, I like my boomy explosion engines.
Absolutely. So. And I'm going to be honest, though, if my 240 didn't make me smell like gasoline when I drove it, that would be an improvement for me.
Right. I just always think of the movie iRobot, where Will Smith gets that old, I think it's a Ducati.
Yeah.
Out, and has the girl hop on the back, and she's like, this thing powered by gasoline? You know that's explosive, right?
Yeah, because he was driving in that electric Audi for most of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, they actually based the 08 Audi TT on the concept from iRobot.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, now that I think of it, it makes sense.
Yeah, the body kit, if you compare 07 to 08, it looks like they just kitted out an 07 TT to look like the iRobot car.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I like that car in that movie. That was like,
it looked really cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of movie cars that I'm just like, that looks dumb. Like, that's not how cars are going to look in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. But, especially future cars.
Yeah. Where you're just like, what? I don't know. I think one of my favorite future cars is from The Fifth Element, like the taxi he drives.
Yeah.
It's just like an old timey taxi that just happens to fly.
Yeah, it just happens to fly, and it has he has all those points on his license.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, you can't drive anymore.
Yeah. Oh, God, I can't wait till we get to that point. Dude, oh. But this is why what we could, like, it's going to be the analog watch to the digital watch thing. Like, digital watches are just so much better
Right.
Really. I mean, they just work better.
But people still buy analog watches.
Because the mechanics of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's the skill of making them, the mechanics of them, the fact that it is analog.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, digital's better, but it's also easy. And easy isn't always the coolest thing.
Right. Even, you know, even though, yeah, it takes more time to read the time off of an analog watch.
Yeah.
You know, and it's to the point now where an analog watch is basically jewelry.
Right.
But, you know.
I should say mechanical to digital watch. Because I guess you could have an analog digital watch.
Oh, like those old
digital watches. Well, like I have an analog watch that has an analog face on it, but it's just a quartz watch.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's
okay.
Just quartz electric. I guess I should say mechanical watches, you know, with all their little gears and...
Yeah, and they run off of the emotion from your body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that till like a week ago.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they all had to be wound up, but no, I guess just wearing it and swinging your arm charges up the freaking thing in there to... Yeah, that's freaking
crazy.
That's
why Brookstone has all those watch winders where you put your watch on it and it spins it around all night.
So I always wondered what those were about, but yeah. I never looked into it. I don't have enough money to afford a watch that can do that, right. So...
Let alone the stand.
Right.
I do love that scene in Doctor Strange, though, when he opens the drawer and he's got a bunch of expensive watches just rotating.
Yeah. Oh, it's... Like, there is a weird intersection between mechanical watch guys and car guys, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you like gears, if you like mechanical components, that's why I like guns.
Yeah.
They're simple, clever little machines.
Yeah.
That are powered by a single explosive charge.
Yeah, so it's car.
Yeah.
Did you see the Mythbusters episode where they tried to figure out why, like, the myth of, like, you can run an engine off gunpowder?
No.
It didn't work very well. They created a bomb.
The engine block just blew up?
Yeah. Because there's just, you can't regulate it in any way.
Yeah, how did they modify the intake valves to pour a certain amount of powder into the cylinders?
Yeah, it was just like a, almost like a funnel thing, like almost a, what am I thinking of, like an hourglass, you
oh,
know,
yeah,
where it
okay.
just pours out a little certain amount, but you can't really control it that way.
Yeah, it's just over time.
Right.
So what happens if you idle too long?
Yeah, and it just fills up too much and the next boom is a lot bigger, But yeah, I guess that's where it comes down to. We're talking about the 8.6 and the manual transmission. I think that's why we like manual transmissions. We like gasoline engines. It's the mechanical part of it.
Yeah.
Yes, you can, you know, you can make a electric car that does everything better and it does everything for you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's computer controlled and stuff. But I was like, that's not what I want.
Right. I want to drive the car myself.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, the amount of control, the fine control you have over a manual transmission is different from any automatic.
Yeah.
That's one reason I love drifting, is almost every car out there is a manual.
Right.
Because you need that level of control to drift well. And that's not really true of other motorsports. Most other motorsports, you're going to go faster and do better with a double clutch gearbox.
Mm-hmm.
But with drifting, it's still kind of old school like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've seen people, like, build drift cars with automatics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You can do it, but, you know, the ability, like, just clutch kick even to initiate, you know, that's a very big thing in drifting.
Yeah. It's a huge, easy way to get it sideways.
Right. You can't do that with an automatic.
Nope. I do wonder, because there is an electric drift Camaro, and I want to know... if it's just the sheer amount of torque, just when he gives it throttle, that gets it sideways, or if he has a way to actually disconnect and reconnect it like a clutch.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see that too. I'm sure, though, just with that kind of power, you can just gun it real quick and just break the wheels loose.
Yeah, it basically accomplishes the same feat as kicking the clutch.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because if you have that much power, you barely have to touch the clutch.
Yeah.
Like with my 240, I've got to put the clutch all the way down and basically floor it.
Yeah.
But it's a stock KA.
Right. You're not making that much power. And, yeah, speaking of power, you know, this new GR86, that also doesn't have much still. 228, 100 horsepower, 184 foot-pounds of torque, just like the BRZ.
Yep.
But that's not, you know, that's not what this car is about. It does make considerably more foot-pounds of torque than the old car.
And supposedly it's more accessible because the biggest issue that people had with the last generation BRZ, and I can vouch for this, is the torque dip.
Yeah, weird torque dip.
It's because it's where the car switches from port to direct fuel injection.
Okay.
And yeah, you've got a little bit of low end torque, then you lose everything, and then you basically don't get it back till 5,500 RPM. So you've got 1,500 to 2,000 RPM to play with at the top of the band.
Yeah.
And that's when the car really sings. But and you've got a 6-speed gearbox, so you can keep it there, but you really have to beat these cars to keep them in their power band.
Right. Which is why I feel like a lot of press guys love these cars, because they're usually taking them on a track,
right,
and they're beating the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And then people get them out on the street and they're like, oh, these are slow.
Right.
Because you don't have anywhere to like rev them out like that.
Yeah. I'm not going to pass anybody without a downshift.
Right.
Which, even in my 240, which makes less power, it just has more accessible torque. I can pass people just by getting a little bit on the accelerator.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing I like about my Fiesta as a street car, and it doesn't really work as a race car as well, because it does peter out horsepower at the top end.
Yeah.
But I can be in sixth gear going up the hill on 25 or 70.
Yeah.
Or, up in the mountains there. And in sixth gear. And I'm just like, oh, this guy's doing 60. I'm doing 65. And just like, and just get on the gas. And it just, that little turbo spools instantly. You got a bunch of low end torque.
Yeah. You've got usable torque.
Right.
Yeah. That same road, I have to drop my BRZ to fourth just to keep myself going at an appropriate speed.
Right. Yeah. So, I understand people's problems with the horsepower, but going from 205 horsepower and 156 foot-pounds to 288 and 184 is a significant bump.
It is a bump, and it's a bigger displacement. I'd like to drive this and just see how it stacks up against the old one. I'll have to go test drive one of these at Toyota or Subaru.
Yeah.
whoever's willing to hand me the keys.
Well, luckily there's a bunch of Subaru dealers around here and a bunch of Toyota dealers around here, so
that's true.
Keep going in, somebody will hand you some keys.
Yep. I still know some salesmen over at Subaru. I bet they'll let me drive it.
Yeah. Or if any of some ways for us to get press cars, please let us know. We would love to be doing some reviews so we can give you some proper feedback and not just secondhand accounts. Yeah,
speculative.
Right.
But definitely would love some press cars.
Yeah. Press cars means you made it, right?
Yeah, that's true. That means we're official.
Right. I mean, shit, I don't care if you give me like a Toyota Sienna minivan.
Yeah, I'll review a minivan.
Right? I'll figure out a way to make that work with Religion of Speed.
I'll review a Hyundai Telluride.
Yeah, in Telluride.
Or is it the Kia Telluride?
Sorry, Kia Telluride, Hyundai Palisade.
Is the Palisade?
I'm pretty sure.
Those are the big three-row SUVs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I still got to say, though, that front bumper looks so much better on this car. I keep coming back to it.
It looks great.
It looks so much better.
All around, this is probably, I think this is the best looking version of the 8.6 chassis to come about.
Yeah. It looks so much more mature. Like, I feel like when the BRZ got revealed, it was trying to be more mature.
Yeah.
But now it looks, I don't know, like,
softer.
Way softer. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not like the GR is really all that aggressive either, but...
No, but it's the right amount of aggressive.
Yeah.
It's not over the top. It is what it is. It does seem like the BRZ is doing a bit of posturing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the newer one is... I definitely prefer the look of the previous generation BRZ, but I'd say that this new Toyota is definitely better looking than any of the previous generation 8.6 chassis. Looking than the FRS for sure.
Honestly, now that we're talking about it, this one looks like this should have been the Subaru version. This looks like the last generation BRZ, the 8.6 does, a little more.
Just with a gaping maw instead of the fins on the front bumper?
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah, because the BRZ had these little side fins right in front of the wheels.
Yeah, and just it had a more square grill, while the FRS and stuff had like the squishier bumper with all like the stuff in it. And
yeah, it was curvier. You know what, maybe they ripped each other off.
They're like, well, I like the way the BRZ looked. Well, I like the way the FRS looked, and they just swapped.
It's funny the way they do that, because when they originally came out, the FRS was the cheaper version, the BRZ was the more premium version.
Yeah.
And then when Scion died, the Toyota 86 became the more expensive version. You know, when I bought my BRZ, I went to Toyota and I went to Subaru and I'm like, all right, who's going to make me the best deal? These are the same cars. I'm happy with either one.
Yeah.
You know, and Toyota didn't want to deal with me, or they didn't want to work with me. They said, why would we price match a Subaru? And Subaru's like, oh yeah, we'll happily undercut them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so Toyota wanted to charge me $1,000 more for a version without Brembos.
Yeah, you're like, no, that's not how this works.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like that just comes down to the dealer, too, and the salesman, you know?
I do think that this is a pattern with Toyota dealers, though. I'm not, and you know, I've only had limited experience, but every Toyota dealer I've dealt with seems to behave as if they have no competition.
I mean, in a lot of respects, they don't, but with a lot of cars.
But there are alternatives.
There are.
Yeah.
But especially out here, like, you know, you want a 4Runner? Like, what else are you going to buy?
Right.
You know, that's going to hold its value like that thing does, be as reliable as that thing is.
Right.
You know.
That being said, I sold a lot of Subaru Ascents to people who didn't want to deal with the Toyota salesman.
Yeah. And that's a terrible, like, I don't know. That's not a comparison I would ever make, but, you know, to other people, an Ascent is just as good as a 4Runner, so.
Yeah, though, you know, it may not be as reliable. Just don't believe them when they say it's got a 5,000-pound towing capacity. It has a CVT transmission. Don't tow anything with a CVT transmission.
No. It's going to end poorly.
Yeah.
So somewhere in that conversation we got with that BRZ, or sorry, with the GR86.
Right.
There's too many names. There's the FRS, the GT86, the GR86, and the BRZ. Yep. All the same car.
Yep. I want to put a Toyota badge on the front of my BRZ and the Scion fender grills on it. Leave the Subaru badge on the back.
They're like, what is it? I don't know. Somewhere in that conversation, we got talking about, you know, airline companies and e-fuels and the future of cars and stuff like that. Well, there was an article on Fast Company that caught my attention that I sent to you. And the title was "The Next Big Thing in Transportation, the Uncar."
Yeah.
Basically, it came down to this author was talking about how the future of the auto industry might come down to the way the airline industry is now, where all planes kind of look the same. Nobody really gives a shit what plane they're on. You know, it's just a mode of transportation, a blob, kind of.
Yeah.
Think of an airplane as a white blob that gets you. Well, it's a white tube with wings that gets you a place.
Right.
There are people out there that are like, oh, I'm getting on a 767 or...
Right.
Is that a plane?
There's the 747, there's the 777.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, seven. Yeah. I used to know planes. Yeah. I don't know planes
anymore. I don't know my big planes very well.
You know, there's Airbuses and shit like that.
Yeah.
There are people that nerd out about that for sure.
Right.
But very few people care.
Yeah.
It's just a plane. They might care if it's a bigger plane or a smaller plane, you know?
Right.
But... And pretty much the way this author was looking at it is with the rideshare systems coming, with self-driving cars coming, where people aren't owning cars, what's the point in making cars that are stylized and personal? Like, right now we buy cars that reflect us.
Yeah.
Because it's, for some of us, the biggest investment we'll ever make.
Right.
You know?
And it's a form of self-expression.
Right.
Yeah.
But if we don't own it, what do we care what it looks like?
Right.
So,
and you know, I saw that comparison, and you know, there are a lot of parallels you can draw there, but cars are far more ubiquitous in our world than planes. People are exposed to car brands. They have memories associated with car brands that just there aren't as many of those associated with planes. And there are a lot of people out there who don't care what they drive. They just want to get from A to B.
Right.
And those people should buy biodiesels and electrics.
Yeah.
So we can burn more gas.
Right.
And as depressing as this article is, there are a lot of, there's a lot of truth to it. I do think it looks past, you know, people like us. And I think that there's more people like us than the writer of this article kind of took into account.
Yeah.
There probably will be a lot of just autonomous electric blobs, you know, just on the road taking people to and from work. I mean, I admit I wouldn't mind taking a nap on the way to work or eating breakfast.
Right, exactly. Give me some time to, you know, sit there and kind of wake up, drink some coffee,
Yeah.
You know, read something, and then I get to work. I'm like, all right, ready to do this.
Yeah.
Not like, oh my God, traffic was terrible. This guy cut me off. And
yeah.
You know, you just get to work.
I got pulled over for expired tags on my way to work.
Yeah, that never happens.
And, you know, I think that there's the people who buy crossovers. That's who this article is for.
Right.
Because if you buy a Nissan Rogue or a Subaru Crosstrek, you don't really care what you drive.
Or a Nissan Kicks.
Yeah, especially if you buy a Nissan Kicks.
Nissan Kicks is my least favorite car of all time at this point.
Least favorite.
Yeah.
All right.
Because it just, it's the epitome of this bland, underpowered crossover, we're trying to be cool, appeal to fucking hip kids bullshit that the auto industry is doing right now, and I hate it.
Yep. And but they know their market. They they're trying to appeal to this new generation, who a lot of them, like we were talking about last podcast, the car to them is almost an abstract concept.
Yeah.
You know, it's a means to do something, not an end to itself.
They're trying to appeal to the people that are like, well, all-wheel drive is safer.
Right.
Why? And then you can never explain why.
No, they never explain why.
No. Yeah. And I'm like, well, why don't you just get a good set of tires? Well, yep. I just, the tires that come with the car. The tires come on car.
Yeah.
And then I go to store and when I need replacements, I buy cheapest tire.
Yeah, I buy tire. Yeah. I have tires. What do you mean good tires? Well, these tires are tires.
Right. They're black and they're round.
They're all the same color.
Right. And it's just like, yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's why I'm in the middle of this article. I think we're going to have a bunch of self-driving bland cars, and maybe eventually we're going to get to a point where all cars on the road, for the most part, are these bland cars. Maybe 60, 70, 80 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, at the point where people don't have the memories of those car brands. They don't have that loyalty.
Yeah.
How many Duesenberg fans do you have around anymore?
Yeah, the only thing left of the Duesenberg is the saying, it's a doozy.
Yeah. Is that where that came from?
Yep. Huh. Because the car was so expensive that it was so rare. People are like, oh, that's a doozy.
Huh. I never knew that. But, you know, you can almost see that already with, like, Pontiac. How many Pontiac fans are around anymore?
Yeah. Well, there's still a lot of Pontiac fans.
I mean, there are, but they're all getting older.
They are. But we had Pontiac in 2008.
Yeah. But, I mean, in general, like, the Gen Zers and stuff aren't clamoring for Pontiacs.
That's true. I haven't heard a 20-year-old mention the brand Pontiac in quite some time.
Right.
And, you know, I think the Solstice and the G8 were the ones, they're the reason we still have Pontiac fans.
Yeah.
Because there were a couple of decent sports cars Pontiac made right up until the end.
Right. So
I wish GM would have kept the Solstice Sky and put it under a, you know, Chevy chassis or something like
that. Yeah, that whole restructuring around 2008 was a strange reason. We're going to keep Buick.
Right. Why? We're going to keep Buick, but we're going to get rid of Saturn.
Right.
Yeah, it's like when I see a Buick SUV driving down the street, all I can think of is that person has shown such poor judgment.
Right?
It's like, because you didn't buy a Buick Encore because you like Buick.
Right.
You bought a Buick Encore because they had some special going or some salesman made you a deal.
Right.
And exactly. You're going to pay more in maintenance through the life of this thing if you'd just gone down the street and bought a Honda Pilot or a RAV4.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd bought something that was decently reliable. But hey, you see these Buicks everywhere.
It's true.
So I can't help but think there's a lot of poor judgment, which really, you know, makes me think that there may be a lot of blobs on the road.
Yeah. And that takes you back to what I started with. I think there's going to be a lot of blobs on the road and then cool cars.
Yep.
We're just not going to have those boring cars anymore.
The boring cars in between.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to have your Toyota Avalon. Which, don't get me wrong, I like the Avalon, but it's a very boring car.
Yeah.
You know?
It doesn't exist to satisfy an urge.
Right.
It's there because people need a mode of transport.
Right. It's a decent size four-door, decent gas mileage, kind of all-arounder car.
Yeah.
You know? And that's just going to go away because those people are going to be like, well, I'm not going to own a car anymore. I'm just going to ride share and hail this autonomous car to get me everywhere.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be Challengers and Miatas and, you know, stuff like that being made for the enthusiast crowd for a while still.
Yeah.
You know, or even like your Tesla Model 3s or your Tesla Roadsters or
your sporty electric cars.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's still going to be that sporting segment, I think. But I think there is going to be a point in time at some point in the future where all that goes away.
Yeah, hopefully it's far enough in the future when we've each got garages full of internal combustion vehicles and
right.
We'll never have to rely on any of these blobs.
But even if we get to that point, there's still companies out there, like there's a Persang Motors in Argentina that makes 100% realistic, like not even like replicas. I don't want to call them replicas of the old Bugatti race cars.
Oh,
these
wow.
are legitimate. Like they have the same tooling. They build them the same way they built them back then. There's nothing updated. These are all handcrafted Bugatti replicas.
Wow.
You know, there's a market for that, for like 30s Bugatti's cars. There's a market for that in 2021.
Yeah, it's like there's the Backdraft Racing. Have you seen those? It's a South African company that builds modernized AC Cobras.
What's that? Is that Backdraft? There's a, what's the name? Superformance?
There's a Factory 5 in Texas that does it too.
What's Superformance? I thought they were in South Africa too.
Are these two separate companies?
They might be.
Interesting. Yeah, it's in Florida. Never mind. I guess I was mistaken.
Okay. I mean, there is the Superformance, which is in South Africa, but Backdraft, I guess, is from Florida, so...
It's funny. I talked to someone getting out of a Backdraft Cobra, and they told me it was South Africa.
Yeah. I mean, they look very similar. This Backdraft Cobra Coupe.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's gorgeous. I love Cobra Coupes a lot.
Yeah, and you just don't see a lot of them at all.
No, I actually think these cars look better with a hard top on them than they do as a Roadster, which I know is not...
No, I agree.
Not a common thing.
It's like the Z4, the BMW Z4 and the Z4 Coupe.
Yeah.
The Z4 is a great-looking car, but as a coupe, it is a breathtaking car.
Yeah.
But what I love about the Backdraft ones is that you can pick between a... Roush charged engine... You can pick a 427. Wow, that one looks gorgeous.
So we're looking at it's a Cobra, hard top, wide bodied. That's the only way I can describe it, with like a custom front bumper on it that incorporates the fender flares a lot better.
And a ton of aero.
This thing almost looks Morgan-ish.
Oh yeah, the front end does look kind of like a Morgan.
Yeah, like a Morgan Aero. Super Aero?
Yeah.
That is gorgeous, though. Oh, my God. But, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you there. Oh, no, it's okay.
That was just...
You can get one, but you can get these either with, you know, a solid axle Mustang suspension or an E36 BMW independent rear.
Oh, nice.
And I think getting one of these with a modern 5.0 or a Roush charged engine and a BMW suspension... I mean, you know, it cost about $85,000.
Right.
Which I would love to do the comparison one day between a Backdraft Shelby, or for the same price, you can buy a new Miata and take it to Flying Miata in Grand Junction and have them LS, give it the LS treatment, the Wilwood brakes, the coilovers.
Right.
And, you know, they're two $80,000 V8 Roadsters.
Yeah, that'd be a very... That'd be a very cool comparison.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun.
I think the Miata would come out on top. I don't know. That'd be very close.
The Miata would be more practical because you can put the top up and park
True.
It.
True, yeah.
If I park one of these anywhere, I'm going to worry about it.
Right.
But it could end up being faster, and you can't argue against the cool factor of an AC Cobra.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the most gorgeous cars ever made.
But I guess this goes back to my point. They're still making Cobras.
Yep.
To this day.
Yep.
You know, those from the 60s. That's 60 years later.
Yeah. They're still making them because it's so iconic.
Right. So I do think there's always going to be this weird niche. Like I said, that's going to be like the mechanical watches.
Yeah.
The prices are going to go way up.
Yeah.
It's still going to exist just for a select few people, and it's going to be rich people.
Yeah.
It's going to be horse racing.
You know,
cars are going to become horse racing.
I'm okay with being the Kentucky Derby person.
Right.
We'll grab a mint julep and watch cars go sideways.
That's gonna be so weird because, like, we think of, like, the Goodwood Festival of Speed, everybody dressing old timey and stuff and being like, oh,
yeah,
you know, and these old timey cars going around. When we're old, it's gonna be us wearing like 80s sunglasses yeah. and like just drifting sideways,
yeah. and ripped up jeans and flip flops,
right? The car meets are just gonna be, your car shows are gonna be really weird in like 60 years.
I'm
like,
looking forward to it.
A bunch of old people with stanced cars.
Fast and Furious 25.
Oh, man. All right. We got to get this wrapped. So it is time once again for our budget racing of the episode. I can't say week because we're not weekly yet.
Budget racing of the bi-weekly?
Something like that.
That doesn't have a good ring to it.
No. We'll come up with a better name for the segment. We're actually going back to SCCA again for this one. SCCA, you went kind of from my shit list to, you know, I'm all aboard again here.
Hey, you know, they're such a huge club, and they have a lot of effects on not only grassroots racing, but, you know, mid-level racing.
Yep.
So if they can get on board with some modern techniques, some just modern classes and lower cost racing.
And just the way people want to race these days.
Yeah, I'm all about that.
Yeah. So another thing besides the endurance racing thing that's become really popular is your time attack, time trials style racing.
Yeah.
One best lap, you know, when you're out there. And finally, I think SCCA has been doing this for a little bit, but I'm just kind of becoming aware of it.
Yeah.
Because they actually, the regional SCCA group out here in Colorado is doing a time trial event out at High Plains Raceway over the July 3rd and 4th weekend. I was supposed to be doing that, but my parents are coming out to visit that weekend. And like I said, I haven't seen my parents in a long time. That's way more important than racing.
Yeah.
But
gotta hang out with your family.
I do really want to do this too, though. It's just what it sounds like. It's your time attack style racing, you know, your grid life time attack, your global time attack, that kind of stuff. All sorts of different classes. You can download the rule set at SCCA's website. And like I said, you go out there, they have a street class. If you have a street car, you can go out there and do that. Or all the way up to fully built, you know, crazy winged time attack crazy shit. And they are doing national races all over the country. This is part of the SCCA national brand, but then also they have rule sets for every regional place to do stuff at their local tracks. So like there's
the
Rocky Mountain region, SCCA, of course, they're doing High Plains. They might be doing one at PPIR.
Okay.
I don't know yet. But
I'm guessing IMI is too wild, wild west for SCCA.
It's just too small too. You can't really do it's such a tiny track.
It is small. It's too narrow.
Yeah. It's a go-kart track at the end of the day. It works good for drifting, but but if you're interested in the national events, they're going to be at Virginia International Raceway. Actually, I guess that's already passed. So they were at Virginia National Raceway. They were at Button Willow. They were at Eagles Canyon Raceway in Texas. I haven't even heard of that one.
Yeah.
The next one is next weekend, actually. So this is going up. June 10th to 13th is a Tire Rack Time Trials Nationals at NCM Motorsports Park in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Then they're going to Palmer Motorsports Park, then to Gingerman Raceway in South Haven, Michigan, which I am still so angry because when I lived next to Gingerman Raceway,
yeah,
there was like nothing going on there.
Oh, and now they host a bunch of stuff.
That's where Grid Life started.
Wow.
That was the original.
As soon as you moved away?
Yeah. Like a year after I moved away, they're like, we're doing a motorsports and music festival at Gingerman. I'm like, I hate you.
Well, you might have never moved out here.
Yeah, probably not. if I fell into the right crew out there.
On that Bowling Green, Kentucky track, I believe that's the one with the sound, the noise rule. So if you blow too high of a decibel on your on the straightaway, it voids your lap.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So we're going to see some weird muffler setups there.
Yeah.
Like they do at Laguna Seca.
Oh, man. It's so sad that they have to do that now.
Right.
It's like a bunch of people built their houses next to a racetrack that was built in the 50s, and then they complained about the noise from the racetrack.
Yep.
It's like, sell me your house.
Right.
Like, I'll listen to screeching tires and roaring engines all night long.
So I just thought of this. I know how to combat this. So you know noise-canceling headphones? They take the noise from the outside and then produce a opposite sound from it to cancel the sound waves. So we need to surround the track with a bunch of really, really, really big speakers and use noise canceling. So if you're inside the track, make as much noise as you want. It's loud. And as soon as you step outside the track, the noise canceling speakers make it all quiet.
I love this idea. This technology could save motorsports.
It could.
Yeah.
You're welcome, everybody. I just saved motorsports. I just saved Laguna Seca.
Now, audio engineers get to work.
Yeah, I don't know how this is going to work, but you figure it out.
Because I've heard Road Atlanta at the end of the season is having similar issues.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ridge Motorsports Park in Shelton, Washington? Pittsburgh International Race Complex and Road Atlanta. So those are all the national ones. If you want to get in on that, that's a lot of good tracks, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Some big name tracks on that list.
Love Road Atlanta.
Yeah, we were just doing some, I downloaded Road Atlanta, right?
On a set of Corsa.
Yeah, so on the sim rig here, when Chris Huffman showed up, that was your first time using the simulator.
It was. I hit a lot of walls.
Yeah, it's very weird to get used to, but he's used to Road Atlanta, so thank God for the modding community of Assetto Corsa. Just be like, racedepartment.com. Oh, there it is, Road Atlanta. I'll just put that in Assetto Corsa, and I get to drive that as much as I want now.
And the render looks amazing.
It does. They did a great job with it for a fan-made project.
The grass looks realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. Like, and like you were saying, the dust effects when you go off into the kitty litter,
mm-hmm.
It makes a big difference.
And it's all thanks to modders.
Yeah.
So we will get into sim racing in a future episode because I want, you know, I always give you a cheap way to get into motorsports. I haven't talked about sim racing much at all yet. And if you want the cheapest way to get into motorsports, well, stick around because we'll talk about sim racing some more.
Sounds good. And yeah, I was really impressed by the sim rig, you know, having never used that. You know, you still have to, like you're saying, get used to not having G-forces to tell you what's going on.
Right.
But the car responded like the car should have responded.
It's more legit than people give it credit for.
I've driven that exact car on that exact track.
Yeah.
And it felt a lot like that.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm happy I have a sim rig now because there's a lot to learn on it. And anyways, we will get into that in a future episode. I don't want to get too much into it right now because we got to end. We've been going long as usual, but I always love talking to you, Chris. So.
Absolutely.
I don't really have any project car updates. Iggy's still sitting at the old shop, just like rotting away. I still need to find a place to put him.
It's good that they're letting you keep him there for now, though.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see how long Chris starts yelling at me. But hey, if you want to get a hold of us and talk to us about sim racing, about SCCA, about what you think the future of cars is going to be, hit us up at contact@religionofspeed.com. Always looking forward to hearing from you guys and gals and non-binary. I don't care.
Yep.
Honestly, I'm 33 years old. This is still a transition for me. I'm going to get it wrong a lot of times, but I still love all of y'all. All right.
Gender has no bearing. We want to hear from everyone.
No, I mean, that's one thing I love about cars is racing is one of those sports that really doesn't give a shit, like where you come from, who you are, what race you are, what gender you are, how tall you are. Well, to an extent, if you're too tall, you don't fit in race cars, but you know, and it's this great equilibrium thing.
Yeah. And hey, if they're good enough, you know, they'll make a bubble and they'll name it after you.
A bubble?
Yeah. You know, the Ford GT, I think it was called.
Oh, the Gurney bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost want to put one of those in Iggy because the way the seat is set up right now, it's like, I need a Gurney bubble in this thing. Well, Chris, you got any updates for us or anything?
No updates on my project cars. You know, still just basic maintenance. Nothing exciting.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, you got to keep up on that maintenance stuff.
Yes, you do.
I will have some stuff coming up on Jelly Bean here soon. Nothing too exciting, but getting it ready for Grid Life. That's the one for doing the full track at PPIR.
That'll
it's
be fun.
Time to get those brakes fixed.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to roast through them on that track.
What's wrong with them now?
Yeah, they're just, the pads are all worn out. Rotors are a little warped. It's time to get them done. I'm a mechanic by day, so I don't want to work on my own cars when I'm off work, you know?
Yeah, that's completely understandable.
All right. Well, I want to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song. You can check them out at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. And if you do, let them know Religion of Speed sent you. And I think that's the only shout out I got for today. So I'm going to call it on that, Chris. As always, thanks for joining me.
See you later, heretics.
Peace out.